Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Almost nobody saw this coming. I'm talking about the tremendous impact that Wahdet Khrizadeh has made on Montana State University and the state of Montana in the last decade and a half. Now, that impact has amazed a lot of people. I know that my friend Sheila Stearns and Lila Taylor saw the possibility, and they pushed hard for it. But I can't think of anyone else who can say that they knew that this little lady from Puerto Rico would have the most transformative impact in the history of Montana State University. So, how did that happen? Well, let's ask her. In a moment, my guest will be President Wahdet Khrizadeh herself. Now, good morning. I'm Taylor Brown, your guest host this morning, sitting in for Tom Schultz, and this is Voices of Montana. Ladies and gentlemen, I do think we have a real treat lined up for you this morning. The 12th president of Montana State University, the lady that's been president since January of 2010, is going to leave us in a few weeks. And she was kind enough to join us on the program this morning. Wahdet, welcome. Thank you for taking a moment to be with us today.
Oh, welcome. Good morning. Thank you so much, Taylor. And good morning, everybody from Voices of Montana. What a pleasure to be here.
I know you've been on it before, and you have a lot of fans across the state who are listening, and I just would make the comment, we probably won't take calls today because we want to give you time to tell your story, but if somebody wants to send a note, they can certainly send us an email here to studio@voicesofmontana.com, and we'll get you that email, Dr. Khrizadeh. But I think it's only fair we start at the beginning. I don't want to make this whole program about history because I want to look forward a little bit. And before we're done, I want you to share some of your philosophies about leadership and how we go forward with the responsibilities of leadership. But we really have to start with where you began, because you were born and raised in Puerto Rico and grew up in a house where nobody had ever been to college before. If I remember right, your parents were young, like 19 years old, and your two aunts lived in the house with you, and your grandmother lived in the house with you, but nobody had been to college, but they had pretty high expectations for you, didn't they?
They did, and I think that, you know, like every parent that wants a better lot in life for their kids, that's exactly what they wanted, and they knew that college education was going to be part of that. And therefore, you know, it was not even a question in their minds. It was not even a question growing up. That was going to be the next corollary, the next step after high school. So I'm in their debt for that enthusiasm and that vision that they had for me.
Well, certainly those expectations, when you grew up with them thinking about that, you're not thinking about that probably. But when your grandmother taught you to read, that just opened up the world for you, you said.
That is the biggest gift I have ever received, right? Having an opportunity to start learning to read at 3 years old and then finding books. And I spent many, 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 many hours and days during my childhood and youth and reading, and that opened so many worlds for me, right? Opened so many realities and things that just confined in a little island in the Caribbean, I would not have been able to learn or to know that those things existed. So that's why I insist so much on the wonderful opportunities that we can give our kids by teaching them to read.
Well, I've been thinking about the expectation they had for you and didn't give you a lot of choice in it. You're going to learn to read. You're going to go to school. You're going to go to college. Is that part of why you seem to have such high expectations for us? I mean, meaning Montana State and alumni in the state and the donors and the football team. And you seem to have awfully high expectations for everybody around you. Is that where it came from?
Well, I think it came from that, right? My mother, as I have said before, she's one of the most intelligent women I have ever met. But also, I need to say, after observing and after being in the classroom, remember, people forget that, but that's where I started. I did not go into higher education thinking that I was going to be a college president, much less a college president in Montana. But this much I learned in the classroom, and that is when we say that college is not for everyone, I think that we are lowballing ourselves. Bearing some incredible cognitive problems, I am convinced that college is actually for everyone, and that college is that ticket to success, and that college is the fastest way for you to improve your social mobility and to be able to help yourself and your family and the community that you live in.
Well, and college means a lot more today than it did when you and I were kids. When you said go to college then meant a lot different. The amount of opportunities and the breadth of experience that a post-secondary education can provide now is so different.
Absolutely. And it will continue to change. And the thing is, we cannot leave our children and our grandchildren to fall behind, because the rest of the world is also catching up to us. So America, the U.S. have absolutely the best universities in the world, and they are happy to welcome our kids. And so, particularly with our mission as a land-grant university, that, I mean, I am always fascinated that we had that vision back in the 1850s, Taylor, right, that we needed to open these public universities to educate the sons and daughters of the working families of America. When we were homesteading, right, we were opening universities left and right at the same time. That was a wonderful confluence, and that is, I think, why we have been able to make great strides. While other nations, it has taken them longer.
Well, you know, there are other nations put a lot of emphasis on bright kids and on training their students, like China and Japan and India. They are training the sharpest, brightest kids they can. But the difference in my mind is they're selecting those kids who have that kind of intellect to try to move their country forward. And here, anybody can play. Any kid can get involved here.
That is the wonderful miracle of the land-grant university. I know up until that moment, we too were following the same European model, right? Where colleges and universities were private and reserved for a family of wealthy means, and particularly men, right? But it was Justin Smith's model that said, no, let's open not just one public national university. Actually, let's open one public state university in each territory and state of the union. That was what was absolutely transformative and bold. Today we love to talk about bold vision. That was bold vision then, and look what we are today.
You know, I don't want to dwell on too much on the past, but there's one piece of your past that I'm uncertain about. I can get why you came to New Mexico, the land of enchantment. I get that. That totally made sense. But what in the world did you see at Montana State? I guess, what did you see here when you saw Montana State and you saw some potential? What was missing? What was not tapped out that made you think there's potential there?
Well, I always say I had my profound doubts, much less about Montana State, but about myself, right? When I was first approached, first of all, I said, you know what, I'm fine here, and it happens to us so many times in our lives, right, that we're comfortable with the status quo. We go into, quote-unquote, autopilot. But this wonderful person who put me in contact with Sheila Stearns, right, that was the day when my life changed. That, a phone conversation with Sheila Stearns, where she explained to me the Montana University system, the vision that she had as commissioner of higher education, and the things that I could do, helped in many ways. What can I say? I had all these fears, Taylor, like, oh my gosh, I'm a Latina, I speak with an accent, I'm 5 feet tall, for goodness sake. And so it was those concerns where when the search company first approached me, I said, what do you see in me that I'm not seeing, right? And this is a testament to what happens, right, when the right group of people get together, and it was a love fast since day one. What did I see in Montana State? I knew it was a wonderful university. I knew it had good backbones, fantastic research. I knew all of that. When I came for my interview, first the airport interview, and I met an incredible woman by the name of Lila Taylor, right? So people say to me, well, what does it feel like, you know, to be a woman in a leadership position? This state was built with the courage and the stamina of incredible women. So kudos to them for opening those paths. And then, quite honestly, when I came to the campus interview, and I have said this many times, faculty are wonderful, so are staff. But my heart gravitates to the students. And the students of Montana State University, they showed in force to my section, and they asked the most difficult questions of my entire stay there during my interview process. And so I said to myself, I would love to be in a university with students like that. And for the last 15 years, I have had an incredible blessing of working with incredible student leaders.
Well, as a past student of Montana State about 50 years ago, I'm pretty familiar with the student body, and I've met every other president and had good relationships with all of them. But what you did, putting students at the forefront, had not been done before, to put students at the center of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, that has been a philosophy that I learned in the classroom, right? And it starts by learning their names. Very simple. And Taylor, I remember when I was in the classroom, I made a special effort of learning every student's name. It has a different ring to it, right, when the faculty member calls your name. And also in those few instances when maybe Taylor is not showing up for class, and it turns out that he and I cross paths, our paths cross on campus or in the sub, and I see you, I just needed to say, "Hi, Taylor. I miss you this morning. I hope you're doing well." And you know what? Taylor started to come to my classes. So it's that special relationship. Teaching is not a transactional opportunity. You're not just selling something in 10 minutes. Teaching has to be a transformational experience. You have a semester. You have 15 weeks. That is a considerable amount of time in a young person's life. And we need to take advantage of that opportunity.
Well, actually, I did go to class. It was Senator Tutbett you're talking about that skipped class so often. But the difference was I had to go to class, and he could do it without going to class. But but thank you for that comment. Good morning, everybody. You're listening to Voices of Montana, the statewide talk show in Montana that's been around about 25 years. I'm Taylor Brown. I'm sitting in for Tom Schultz, our regular host today, and have a very special guest. It's a treat to have Dr. Waded Cruzado, the outgoing president of Montana State University. I feel like I don't really need to introduce her, because if there's hardly anybody in Montana that doesn't recognize the sound of your voice, then they must not live in one of those 56 counties where you've taken your bus. But then it occurred to me, Dr. Cruzado, that maybe there's somebody that just moved to Montana and they don't know who you are or what you've accomplished here. So I always try to think of that when you and I are talking here. And I pity them, because if they think that the next 15 years are going to be like the last 15, they're in for a rude awakening, because the last 15 years have been accomplishment after accomplishment. And I guess I wanted to move to that, if I could, just briefly, about some of the things that have happened at Montana State University since you've been there. The easy one to talk about is the investment in the campus. If somebody goes back to Montana State today, hasn't been there for a while, the first thing they notice is the whole complexion of the campus has changed. I think I was interested in the note that they said that in 25% of the square footage at the universities in their 132-year history has either been renovated or started or completed while Waded Cruzado has been the president there. What a pace. And you didn't do that by yourself. That $880 million in the 13 major projects I can think of, that was an amazing success story, and you were helped by an awful lot of generous people.
Absolutely. I always say, right, every time we accomplish something, someone has helped us. And none of the wonderful things that you see at Montana State University have been just accomplished by the leader. The leader is just a vessel, right? But the reality is that we have extraordinary alumni. We have people who, even when they haven't had a connection to Montana State University and who are newcomers to the state, they have said, yeah, I believe in what Montana State University is doing. I want to help. So that's how we of course, we started with the end zone project, and that was thanks to my friends in the quarterback club. That was an impossible dream in a way, a very ambitious plan at the time to fundraise $8 million, and we were able to fundraise 11 and to build the end zone in 10 months flat, all of it. That was amazing, and I think that that gave us the adrenaline to keep on and you know, to add academic buildings, to add new residence life building, new dining halls, and opportunities also to partner with the state, for example, with the Wool Lab and the Vet Diagnostic Lab that's going on 19th Street. So many wonderful opportunities are all around, and many committed Bobcats and wonderful people.
I remember when Jake Jabs wanted to help, and I was so glad to see the business development of our business opportunities and the entrepreneurship at Montana State. And he was thinking in the terms of $3 to $5 million, I believe. And when you were done with him, he was given $25 million, and it was the biggest gift we'd ever received. And we hadn't even heard of the $50 million that would come from the Gianforte Foundation or from the Norm Asbjornson donation or the $101 million from Mark and Robin Jones. I mean, you set a goal so high, and I bet it even amazes you sometimes that those goals become reality.
No, you're absolutely. I know I'm always thankful. And, you know, in my prayers, I always send blessings to the many wonderful donors who have made this transformation possible. And you're right. The first academic building was thanks to Jake Jabs. And at the time, if you remember, our College of Business was co-housed with the College of Education, Health, and Human Performance. And he was thinking about, as you said, doing something for Reed Hall. And then I said, well, you know, but it's time for the College of Business to have its own building, its own hall. And you know what? In just a short period of time, like in a decade or so, that college became the largest business college in the state of Montana. Right now, the Jake Jabs College is three times as large as the next College of Business in the state. That is an amazing rate of growth, and it's thanks to the not only the building that he gave us, but the ethos, right? The energy, the passion that he communicated to the students. I also want to remind you, Jake still comes and teaches for us at the Jake Jabs College at least one class, one day a year, right? And Jake is 97 years old. He doesn't stop. And so that is the mentality that we have at Montana State, which harkens back to when we were first founded, 1893. And in a matter of 4 months, we were imparting classes already from a skating rink in Bozeman, and eight people showed up, including three women. It's in our DNA. So that's why we have been so successful.
We got about 5 minutes left here before our next break, but I wanted to touch on the engagement with these students, because I think you've already mentioned you held high standards for those Bobcat supporters who want to contribute to the college. But I think in my mind, the most significant thing you've accomplished as president, or certainly high on the list, is to help students expect more of themselves. The performance metrics that we worked on so long to improve things like enrollment and graduation rate and time to degree and retention and the average credit load. I mean, to me, those measurements and that performance, that is what transformed the students, I think.
Now, thank you for that question, because that's at the heart of what I tried to do, right? When I first arrived, we were a fine school. But, you know, we were coming out of that era pretty much of where university presidents used to welcome freshmen by saying, look to your left, look to your right, those students will never graduate. And I never thought that that was good. That is not good for the student. It's not good for the university. And certainly, it's not good for society. It's a lot of wasted talent. And so we started with something pretty simple, which is, let's take a look at the credit load that those students are taking. And what we found is that only 40% of our students were actually attending Montana State full-time, which means 12 credits or more. And so we decided that you need 120 credits to graduate. What that tells us is that you need to enroll at least in 15 credits every semester, starting with your freshman year. But we were not doing that. On the contrary, we were following the model, in the national model, where students were advised to enroll in 12 credits. Well, right there, right? You could not graduate in 4 years. And so I needed a branding model for that incentive, which, by the way, it's an incentive that is present in every campus of the Montana University system, and that is that students only pay for the first 12 credits. The rest of the credits is free. And so it is known as the flat spot internally in the system, but I didn't like that name. And faculty member Sarah Rushing gave me the perfect phrase. We call it the Freshman 15 at Montana State University. It's not only about the additional pounds that will go around your waistline, but about the additional rigor in your class schedule. And that's when it started to change, Taylor. What happened was student persistence went up. Actually, students do better when they are more busy with their coursework than when they have less credits. And what happens then, we had 20 points. I mean, we grew by 10% our 6th graduation rate, but we doubled. We accelerated the 4-year rate. And so when I welcome the new parents and the new students, I say, I love you all, but I really need for you to graduate, to get you out of here in 4 years or less, diploma in hand, and I always get a standing ovation from parents. It works.
One of the things that's worked really well with students is your implementation of the Maurice Hillman scholarships.
Yeah.
Scholarships that aren't really designed for the very best and the very brightest and the very tops, but for people like Maurice Hillman, who was an alumni of Montana State, became a world-renowned microbiologist, developed over 40 vaccines, but came from humble beginnings. That describe just in the next minute or so the Maurice Hillman scholarships.
So we wanted to we already attract the best and brightest students that graduate from Montana high schools. Between 65% of 70% of all honor students come to Montana State. But I wanted to make sure that I remain true and faithful to the land-grant mission, right? And so we, just like with Maurice, who thought that his highest aspiration in life was to work in the local JCPenney in Miles City, but his uncle saw something, that's exactly what we do. We ask people from Extension, our wonderful colleagues from Extension, they help us identify Montana residents who are not even thinking about coming to college. We get them a very rigid structure. They start a month earlier. They commit to enroll in 15 credits, and the results have been amazing. Just 2 weeks ago, we graduated yet another physician. This guy, now he graduated from Michigan State University. We have graduated attorneys and businessmen and farmers and individuals that now have the wherewithal to advance their careers and to advance their communities, and that would not have been made possible if they have stayed at home thinking that I'm not a college material kid.
Well, it is Voices of Montana, all right, but Tom Schultz has taken a day off today, and we wish him well. I think he's doing some outdoor work on his house today, so we wish him well on that. Tom will be back next week, of course. We'll have a Best of Voices on Monday on Memorial Day, and talking about nuclear energy, and then Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, he's got some leaders in the state legislature to talk about water policy that came out of the legislature this year. So Tom will be back. Meanwhile, Taylor Brown, your guest host today, along with Ken Adelblue in the studio, and our guest, Dr. Waded Cruzado, the president of Montana State University, giving us a little bit of a recap of her amazing 15 years at Montana State. Dr. Cruzado, I've got to say, before I get into talking about leadership philosophies, I have to say, one of the marks that you left at Montana State that everybody will remember was the run-on at the football games. I don't know if it's the best in the nation. I haven't seen them all, but I've seen several. And when that rodeo team rides out on the field, nobody could have accomplished that. I mean, you did something there. And what people may not know is at the college rodeo, the football team carries the flags out on the rodeo arena. So, I mean, that's got to be one thing that you just beam every time you see that.
That has been one of the highlights. And I need to say, even you just describing it, I'm having goosebumps all over. And every Saturday when they do that, I cry, right? Because to me, it's the perfect, they perfectly model who we are. This is Montana State. And you can see it, right, from the reaction of the public. And kudos to Leon Costello and to our wonderful football coaches who, you know, allowed us to do that, and we're on board immediately. That has been one of those distinctive marks, as you said. And what about when ESPN game day was here? That's what gave us visibility nationally. I heard so many wonderful feedback, right, from around the nation. And I just need to say, it is the very best in its class. There's nothing like that in any college in America.
You talk about looking out and crying when they come on the field. What I'm watching for is which of those horses are, it's the first time they've been on the arena and really aren't in running in control. but they accomplish it.
I have a secret for you. You know, at the beginning I was concerned about the flames and the crowds and the noise. No problem with that. What those horses do not like, they don't like Champ.
I'll bet.
They don't like Champ, and so we try to keep Champ away from the horses.
My little 5-year-old grandson, when he came to the after the football game field activities, and I knew Champ had been working all day long, and still he came and knelt down and signed an autograph for my little 5-year-old grandson. And my grandson told me, said, "I even got an autograph from the lion." So I know how those horses feel when a giant lion's walking around on the field. So, gosh, yeah. Let's talk about leadership.
There you go.
Let me talk about leadership. It was such a treat a couple of weeks ago to be at your farewell banquet and hear leader after leader extolling the virtues of what you've accomplished with them. And I want to talk about that and get you to share some of your secrets of leadership with our audience today, because one of the comments that came out was when the mayor of Bozeman said the other night, he said she has superpowers, you know, and her superpower is she has the power to convince us that we can do great things even when we don't think we can.
Absolutely. Well, again, that's very generous. And, you know, I think that the most fundamental thing that we need to think is that leadership is a relationship. That's the most important thing. And there are many books, but, you know, you learn leadership by trying to persuade people to convince them to work with you. But it's been an incredible experience. Let me tell you one thing. When we started, we agreed to 2 retreats a year. And at every retreat, at every single one, we read one book. And there are 3 books that I'll throw the titles out there. I won't go into detail, but if for your summer reading, the three most important books for me that we read during that time was Good to Great from Jim Collins, The Leadership Challenge by Poses and Posner, and The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni. The summary of the three is that the most important thing that a leader needs to pay attention first is your team, right? Make sure that you have the right people in the bus, in the right seat in the bus. And I was blessed with having the most amazing individuals in that team. The second part is you have to be very disciplined, right? Because you will be tempted to chase so many rabbits every day. And so the mantra is disciplined thought, disciplined people, disciplined action. Even when it hurts, right, we commit to each other to a certain plan, and that's what we're going to do no matter what temptations are thrown at us. The other part that it's important is to embrace your mission. have a clear sense of who the organization is. This applies to universities, but not only to universities, right? To businesses, for profits. It's all the same. For me, the most important thing about modeling the way or those institutional values, of course, is the land-grant university. And that's why people can tell you at every single time, I always started welcoming people, saying, welcome to your university, right? Reminding us we're public, we belong to the people of the state of Montana. Telling them the history of the land-grant university and finishing with a Go Cats Go. But I noticed that when I repeated the history of the land-grant university, that was very important for people. Finally, approaching some final recommendations. It's important for the leaders to keep the eye in the future. We get stuck, you know, putting up fires every day. We would not have been able to do our job at Montana State University just by paying attention to that. We paid attention to those. Those are important. But what are we committed to accomplish? And it's always in the future, and it's always about, you know, the center of your attention, which, as you said, in our case has been the students of Montana State. Finally, it's important to recognize and to celebrate people and to do that in public so that people feel, you know, celebrated and important. This team that we have, we start every morning with a 10-minute stand-up meeting in my office. In a circle, we stand in a circle, and we just tell everybody what we're going to be working on that day. What that has done, it has taught us a lot about the nature of each other's work. It has solidified the sense of team. There is a lot of banter, right, and good humor. And it has also reduced or minimized gossip or innuendos or the ugly stuff that get in the way of accomplishing extraordinary things. I do believe, just like as college is for everyone and everyone can complete a degree, I also believe that anyone can be a leader. It's not too complicated. You need to put people first. Not your agenda, people first.
You know, everything changes, but you have brought about change, I think, by challenging the way things have been. You've changed. I mean, you talk about your team there at Montana State, but you've changed a lot of the process at Montana State, and particularly in the way you've reorganized some of the thinking. Not everyone has a servant's heart, Dr. Grisato, but you have created a lot of that.
Well, but that's the most important thing, right? When you give yourself honestly to people, in a way, it comes back reciprocated. I always say the four most important words I can say is, I need your help. That's it. I need your help. And no one, it has not been my experience that anyone ever denies that invitation, right? Not because I'm the president, but because from that sense of vulnerability and humility, people want to be part of great things.
Once you say you need your help, that's also saying, I trust you and I believe
exactly.
in you, and you are the person that can help me.
Absolutely. And again, people, and you let that person work, and it always happened that their performance exceeded my expectations. And then once you have one victory and one accomplishment, you start building on it, right? It's a virtuous cycle that starts coming.
Well, like everybody that's listening to this program this morning, I am disappointed that you're not going to be doing that for 15 more years at Montana State. But when we come back from this commercial break, I want to talk about what you will be doing for the next years ahead as national president of an association that does exactly the same mission you've been following. So I really hate to wrap up this conversation with my dear friend, Dr. Wadid Grisato. But it occurs to me, Dr. Grisato, when I was at that banquet the other night at Montana State, knowing who your favorites are in the room, everybody in that darn room thought they were your favorites. I mean, certainly the rodeo team knows they're your favorites, and the AGRs, you've told them, I'm practically, and the wool growers, there's no question wool growers think you're their favorite, but And those Hillman scholars, those are smart kids. You think they should be able to figure out they're not your favorite, that we are. But that is what you've imparted to us, is you made so many people become part of your circle. And I guess before we go in to talk about what you're going to do next, I wanted to just touch just quickly on the force for freedom that education means. That you're going to be at the national level now. You're going to be in Washington, D.C., working with 250 universities and colleges, not including ours as a land-grant school, but the force for freedom that this brings, this whole system brings, is important in our world today, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, you know, when we notice our enrollment growth, yes, it's great to have the line that we are the largest university in the state, and we have been that for 10 years, but what I really wanted to make sure is that to penetrate that for the message and the values of the land-grant university to penetrate our nation. This has been one of the most incredible social experiments in the history of humankind, how wonderful that it happened in America, and it is a tool for us to strengthen democracy. So when we invite all these students to come to Montana State, that is my hope, that these individuals will go out and build a better society, that they will become committed citizens, and that they will lead happy and healthy human beings.
There certainly are some challenges in the system of universities. I mean, first of all, it's a bastion for liberal thought. You're supposed to think out of the box and think of new things when you're there, not the same as you've been. And then there just are challenges when you're working for taxpayers and there's probably challenges ahead. As you look ahead to the rest of the future for university land-grant systems or any colleges, just the inherent structure of universities brings challenges, doesn't it?
Well, you know, yes. And as I was thinking the other day, I could have all those cautions. But at the same time, my point of departure is one of hope. You know, I think, quite honestly, that when we execute the philosophy of the land-grant university, that is the best antidote to counterrest the bad things that have gone wrong with higher education. When we, you know, it is wrong when land-grant university starts behaving, right, like very elitist schools. We are not here to chase privilege, right? I do believe that we are here to choose promise, to open those doors, to see what the Hillman Scholar can do, right? To open those, to knock at the door of that rodeo team, of that young man or woman in Montana, and said, come to Montana State University, we're going to help you, right? Educate you, be successful, put those keys in your hands. And I think that that is the core. So I hope, right, that by serving this association, which, by the way, was not the plan, Taylor. I was going to honestly retire and be with my family. But after devoting 15 years to extolling the virtues of the land-grant university, it was not possible for me to continue to say no to serving the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities. That is the oldest university association in the nation. And I hope that I can remind us and help, you know, have people come together under the tent that we belong to the people of America. We are here to educate the sons and daughters of the working families, and we need to do a good job. Mm-hmm. Our future is at risk if we don't.
Well, that's where we're going to have to leave it, Wadid. I so appreciate you being on with us. I hope that little Celeste and Aurora get to see you, because you'll be based in Washington, D.C., so that's not exactly where they are, but we appreciate you being on with us today.
Taylor, thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you to the people of Montana. I will never forget you, and Montana now is my home.
It'll be a while till they forget you. Dr. Wadid Cruzado, retiring president at Montana State University, our 12th president. I'm Taylor Brown. Thanks for joining us for Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.